Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
I think Blaine has a good rapport with the tight ends. I think it's a pretty darn good group of tight ends.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Today we'll talk to Steve about the 49ers' 41-23 loss to the Saints, but first I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Well, Steve, the 49ers had another really good first half on offense, and then the second half, they didn't do much, and they end up losing to the Saints, a team that's really hard to keep up with if you don't have your offense going for all 60 minutes. And, you know, another terrible game, really, for the defense, and the rushing yards just keep piling up, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But let's start with the offense, because first half, I mean, it's kind of what I think the Niners have been looking for all year. They were putting up points. Kaepernick looked pretty good. You know, what do you think they need to do, first of all, to just be more consistent so they can do that throughout the whole game?
Yeah. They need to make first downs. That's, you know, looking at the stats again, two for nine
on third. Yeah.
And 0-for-2 on four. So two for 11, basically. Not going to get it done, and the Saints, I think, were like 11 for 17, which is
right. That's
you know,
right.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Hence the reason they had 80 plays. So, they just have to be able to maintain drives. I mean, I thought there were some good things. There were some big plays. I thought the running game looked a little better. When I looked at the stats, it wasn't all that great, but we were throwing the ball obviously more and had more big plays throwing the ball, with Cap having 385 yards, I think it was.
398 actually, all told, yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, you know, that's a heck of a day passing wise. And percentage was pretty good. I mean, he and Breeze were almost identical, other than the turnover. I think Breeze had 3 touchdown passes.
But, he did. Yeah. Cap had the one interception.
Yeah. There just was, I mean, from a New Orleans standpoint, just much more consistency in the throws and the timing and things like that. But honestly, I think the difference was didn't convert on third or fourth down and turnovers.
Yeah.
Line.
Well, yeah, there was a fumble and there was actually the 49ers all told had 3 lost fumbles.
Right.
And,
three
and
the
interception.
So four, right.
Yeah.
So four turnovers.
Four
yeah.
turnovers. And the one fumble I really think about is the Davis one that was near the goal line. But, that was really bad.
Yeah.
But let's start actually with Colin Kaepernick, because you know we always talk about the quarterback, and you're a former NFL quarterback, and I just, for me now looking at Colin, a lot of it has to be mental, because I think he seems like he's in the best rhythm that he's been in this whole season. You know, he didn't start out as the starter, but I still shake my head at some of these throws where it's just, you know, it's way over the guy's head. He had that one stretch where he was 0-for-7, and He just didn't seem like he could get locked in mentally. I don't know if he was rushing himself. What did you see there when he did go through his struggles? Because there were so many other moments where you thought, oh, okay, he can move the ball. He's throwing it well. Things are going pretty well. But then here we go where he has that bad stretch.
And it seemed like most of them, if not all of them, were just launched, you know, over the guy's head. There was one that was low. Now that I think about it, that was – I think down in the red zone, but I think I know we've talked about this in the past. He's not as comfortable in the pocket.
He'd much rather be rolling out and throwing. It's almost like you need every play to be that.
Much rather be throwing on the run.
Yeah.
From what I can tell. He just doesn't have the rhythm in the in his drop, or you know, rhythm into his throwing motion, and seems like he rushes them.
That's what I thought. I even thought I saw Chip Kelly telling him to calm down. You know, you're rushing it. You're a little bit too hyped at one point.
Right. That's possible. I didn't notice that during the game, but. That's possible.
Well, what causes that? I mean, is it similar to a pitcher in baseball? They have so much adrenaline, you know, then all of a sudden they're all over the place. I mean, because mechanics as a quarterback, I kind of compare it to a baseball pitcher or even a golfer. You got to keep those mechanics similar, don't you? I don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah, and they can easily get off. You know?
Right,
they
right.
They can easily be off. Unfortunately, for most of us, they're probably off more than they're on. Otherwise, we'd be better.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
When you find yourself in that funk, and for me, you had to find it in my feet, in my drop, in the rhythm of my drop into my throwing motion. That's what would always help me get back to throwing in rhythm. Back to my point a few minutes ago is that he doesn't seem to be comfortable in there. I don't think he sees things terrifically. So he wants to get the ball out of his hand. Whereas when he's on the run, you know, it's one or two guys and I can focus in on them and make an accurate throw.
Yeah, I mean, when things were going well in that first half, it just seemed so easy. And I don't know how much of that was the Saints defense, but especially like Quentin Patton, he seemed to be getting open. They had that little pitch to him where, you know, he made a nice run. Just a simple little pass to DeJuan Harris, that goes for a touchdown. You know, just all these little things that seemed easy, and then they weren't coming easy anymore.
Well, yeah, and you know, why that changes, honestly, I don't know. I don't know what's being said at halftime. I don't know what, if guys are letting their guard down at halftime. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's obviously something's not right because they've done it almost every game. Where they played well in the first half and not in the second half. I don't know if they're, making changes at halftime, maybe making too many changes, or I'm not making changes at all. I'm not sure. I don't know exactly what's going on that they can't come back out of the locker room and be as consistent as they are in the first half.
As the San Francisco 49ers podcast with Joe Castellano and Steve Bono continues, there's more to tell you about as far as my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. 49ers fans from outside the Bay Area, listen up. TPC Harding Park has a great deal for you when you are planning your trip to Levi's Stadium to see the 49ers. While you're in town, take advantage of Golf the Gridiron, featuring discounted tee times and free club rentals. Visit tpc.com and click on special offers for tee time deals at San Francisco's own TPC Harding Park. I couldn't believe this stat when I saw it. And again, that they lose like this, that they had the only foursome in franchise history to have 75 plus receiving yards in a game. McDonald had 84, Patton had 106, Celek 76, and DeJuan Harris had 83, had that big catch and run for the touchdown. So you got four guys that had, you know, pretty big game.
First time in franchise history.
That's hard to believe. Yeah, when you're talking about the 49ers.
Yeah.
So when you have those kind of big plays happening, you would think there'd be a lot of confidence just rolling along, and then it doesn't happen. And then, okay, this really kind of adds to it is that you mentioned it, the time of possession, and a lot of times
it's
that doesn't
off.
Tell. Yeah, it doesn't tell the whole story, but in this case, I mean, you've got defense that's on the field 17 more minutes.
Yeah,
than the other team, you know, as far as their defense, and you get exhausted.
There's one of those whole quarters that they talked about, the defense in Philly last year under Chip Kelly, you know, was on the field two full games more than the offense. Well, there's one quarter right there.
Yeah. So that's a problem. I mean, if you're out there that long.
Yeah.
And
And that goes back to you have to be able to convert on third down.
Yeah, you don't have those first downs
or
rolling.
Fourth down. Yeah, you don't. And you can't turn the ball over when you're not a good team. You know, back to the point again. Do bad teams turn the ball over, or do good teams turn the ball over that make themselves bad?
Right. Either way, it's not working.
Exactly. You can't do it.
You can't do it. But you also can't give up all these rushing yards. I mean, now the 49ers have set a record. Seven straight games, they've given up a 100-plus rusher. So that's not a fluke anymore. And we keep looking at, okay, what's the answer? I know on the telecast, Steve, watching it, I mean, Rondae Barber kept saying, well, you know, Arik Armstead's out. But I don't think he's been the answer to stop the run. It seems like just a team-wide issue, don't you think?
It totally is. And guys are guys are out of position. I don't know if they're so much out of position, but they're, you know, some of the runs, when you watch them on replay, they're technique wise, they're just not good.
Yeah,
I mean, they're getting, you know, especially the second level guys, the linebackers are just getting smothered by offensive linemen. You know, and instead of being able to, you know, take guys on with a, you know, inside shoulder, you know, have the outside hand, you know, free for, you know, leverage wise, you just see guys getting mauled.
Oh yeah, I saw that. There was a run by Ingram, one of his big ones. It might have been that 75-yarder where it looked to me like Eli Harold, he had no shot. He was just getting blocked. And he was the player really that could have made the tackle, but he got manhandled.
Yeah. And then the safety took the wrong angle.
Yeah.
You know, he came too far inside and he lost his leverage.
Yeah, I was thinking about that even with DeForest Buckner. He looks like he's so anxious to rush the passer that sometimes he's going ahead of the play and can't get to the running back.
Yeah, well, they play so tall that, you know, again, they're pass rushing, you know, on running downs.
Yeah.
You know, arm overing guys and basically giving up rushing lanes. So, it's unfortunately consistently not good.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not a fluke. Honestly, I don't know if they have the players to fix it.
And that's what I wanted to talk about, too, because there's been a lot of reports now about Jim O'Neill and his job as the defensive coordinator. He's a young guy. Chip Kelly has said that it's not his fault. You know, it's everybody that's coaching it.
It is.
Yeah, and then you wonder about the personnel. And Eric Reed, actually, who, by the way, we're planning on having a special podcast with him Monday at the Brixton in San Francisco. So I encourage people to show up there Monday night. Listen to this quote. He said, "This is probably my favorite scheme that I've played in. It gives everyone an opportunity to make plays, but they're not making the plays, I guess."
Well,
right? I mean, it's not the execution that you want.
Yeah, interesting.
He said they aren't disciplined, and that's when the big plays happen. Is that what you see? Is it a discipline thing too, you think?
I think that's part of it. Again, just, you know, an example is back to, you know, two defensive ends who are play high. They're tall guys in
Armstead Buckner. And Buckner. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I mean, they're tall. They play tall, unfortunately, and they're they're pass rushers, and they're playing like they're pass rushers on, like I said, on rushing downs, and they try and arm over a guard or a tackle, and they're now they've just given up the lane. So that's a discipline issue, no question. You know, linebackers, like I said, they seem to get themselves to the position, but they are not. Their techniques don't seem to be up to snuff. You know, taking on a linebacker, taking on a guard who's, say, he's pulling, and you know, you're taking them on with your inside shoulder, keeping your outside arm free for leverage, things like that. That defensively, you have to do and have to be able to fill all the gaps with the correct angles.
Yeah.
So, honestly, again, at the end of the day, they just don't have enough talent.
No, I mean, and every running back that comes in to play the 49ers or on the road, you've got guys who are benched, like Ingram, having a huge game with 158 yards, and then even the number two back has almost 100 yards. Hightower had 87. And you've talked about it, Steve, how the running game leads to a good passing game. And I don't know how much that was really the case. I mean, with Breeze, he is so in sync with his receivers. Isn't it fun to watch?
honestly, it was. Second half, I went down and sat down low and watched them, and you know, some of those, you know, throws that the so-called experts on television love to call the back shoulder,
right,
you know, throws. I mean, they are, but what was amazing to me was, I mean, he kept throwing them, but that the receivers never looked back.
No.
Until they knew that that ball was in the air and close to them.
They didn't
have to peek. And so it's hard on the DB, because the corner is watching. He's watching the eyes of the receiver.
Uh-huh.
You know, and looking for him to peek. Well, he never peeks, and then all of a sudden he turns back and the ball is right on his back shoulder. You know,
yeah.
He puts his hands up, makes the catch.
Yeah.
So it was fun to watch. I mean, let's face it, Drew Brees is a very good quarterback. He's been doing it for a long time, and I have to admit it was fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a technique that I wonder about how much you used it as a player, or even, you know, you've coached as well. You know, high school quarterbacks like Kel or Christ. I wonder about the receivers in this situation. I was just watching it, and I don't know how often it happens, Steve, but it looked like that maybe a receiver be going out and his back might be to the sideline. So he'd have all that room from the defensive back to the sideline,
right,
to work with. And they had that perfectly nailed where, like you said, back shoulder, or just throwing that area where there's no way you could defend it.
It's a total technique. I mean, as a quarterback, Your mindset needs to be that that the corner is always wrong. So meaning that you can make a throw to make that corner be in the wrong position.
Right. He has no shot.
Yeah. He has no chance. And you know, yeah, that's obviously not always the case, but that's the way the quarterback needs to think. And I guarantee you, there's one particular one that sticks in my mind. It was I think it was the third quarter, and it was right in front of the Niners bench. And I know that receiver, I don't even remember who the receiver was from New Orleans, but I'm pretty sure he's running a go route. But the corner's in good position on the go route, so Breeze just throws it at the back of his helmet. You know, and the receiver knows that, okay, this guy's running stride for stride for me.
Just turn around.
This ball's coming to my back shoulder.
And I just turn around. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's there.
And it's there.
And we don't see the 49ers do that. I mean, they're throwing to tight ends, running backs, and like you said, Kaepernick on the run. I don't see that pass very often. Do you?
No. It's a totally different philosophy. Totally different system. You know, it's I don't think it exists in their system. It's just not part of Chip Kelly's offense.
No.
You know, the catch that the guy from New Orleans makes, the receiver makes down in the end zone for the touchdown to make it 35. Anyway,
oh, that was reached,
you know, pass interference.
Challenge.
He reaches around the guy.
Yeah.
You know, makes the catch. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That was
catch.
Thomas. Yeah.
Unbelievable catch.
That was an unbelievable catch.
Yeah.
I was listening to Ted Robinson on that one. I was on the road listening, and he got about as excited for that catch as he had for anything.
It was awesome. I was, like I said, I was sitting down low at that point watching, and that's absolutely ridiculously good.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
By the way, another thing I got from listening to the radio broadcast from Tim Ryan that I wanted to ask you about was Colin Kaepernick, when he does the read option. I thought Tim came up with a really good analysis of how Cap is really fast when he turns it into second and third gear, but that first or second step is not really that quick. He has these big strides. So
yeah.
When you're doing a read option, it's like it really is slow to develop, isn't it? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, with Cap, it probably is on the first two steps.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. But step three and four, you better have the right angle because you're going to miss.
Well, that's why if you design a run for him or he runs out of trouble, it's different than read option where it takes a little while. You know, you're faking, you're standing there, and then all of a sudden you got to start. It's like being on a bicycle at a stop sign, you know, instead of being already on the move.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I would say that there probably aren't many that are better than Cap at doing it just because he did it for so long in college. I mean, he was obviously turning his back more in college because the guys lined up behind him, not beside him,
right,
as he is now. It's just, but every, you know, every play in this offense, to me, starts with that read option, whether it's a run or a pass. You know, it's kind of always a little token play action fake, basically.
Right, that we might be doing this, yeah.
That we might be doing this.
Right.
That would probably drive me nuts because we weren't used to that. But, you know, I guess my point is that if anybody really can do it, it's Cap, because his whole offense in college, the pistol, was like that, where, you know, he turned his back to the defense when he caught the ball, and it was always some sort of a play action or always a run movement first, whether it was a run or a pass.
Right.
You know? Hopefully we can play four quarters, you know, at some
right.
point.
Well, I think a lot of people are trying to come up with ideas now because, you know, now you're 1-7. You've lost 7 in a row. You're going to try to win some games here at some point. You got New England coming in a couple of weeks after this Arizona game this Sunday in Arizona. But what about the bigger picture? Because, Steve, I mean, people are coming up with all kinds of things. I mean, you hear reports about Chip Kelly, you know, maybe getting another job. But he's saying, I'm staying here. I got a contract, and I want to see this thing through. I hear Larry Kruger on KMBR coming up with this theory that cracked me up. He said the York should go on vacation and travel the world and get a GM in there that knows what he's doing and just leave him alone. I mean, you hear all kinds of ideas.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it has to be blown up and start over? Or what do you think? I mean, how do they get this going again?
Get some talent.
Yeah, that's where it starts.
We got to get talent, period.
Right.
I mean, that's... you know, that makes every coach look good. So, you know, how do they do that? You know, I have my theories. I don't know if they're appropriate for the air, but you know, if they do make change, I think what they I'm not going to state what it is, but if they make the change that I think they're going to make, the next move isn't as good. You know what I mean?
So you mean?
I mean,
these are off-season changes, obviously.
Yeah. No, these are off-season changes. Yeah, yeah, my theory of what's going to happen, but I
yeah, well, I'll come out. I'll just say that I think Trent Baalke's going to be gone, but, you know, I mean,
most likely.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's the general manager.
He's the general manager, and he's, I mean, they've already fired a coach or two coaches in a row, so.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. You're right.
I mean, they're not going to fire Chip, so unfortunately, the next guy that's got to go is Baalke.
Right. And.
But now who becomes the general manager?
Well, yeah, that's what, another off-season question.
I have my theories, but you know we'll see.
Yeah, that's where it starts. But you know it can turn just as quickly as it went down from being a Super Bowl team. It can turn around quickly too. We see it around the NFL. Look at the Raiders right now.
There's no question. I mean, yes, the Niners are 1-7. You know, who's the best team in the league right now? Probably maybe the Raiders at 7-2.
One of the best. I thought after watching them Sunday night, they look like a Super Bowl contender, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, so my point is that the difference between those two teams, between the Niners and the Raiders at 1-7 and 7-2, really isn't that great. It's actually, you know, it's only a few people,
right,
I'll say, to make it more measurable. It's, you know, it's maybe three or four guys, let's say.
Yeah. I would agree with you. Yeah.
So it's yes, record-wise, it's a 14-point swing.
Right.
You know, but or whatever you want to set, we'll call it an 8-point swing to get them both to 500. So yes, on paper, record-wise, it looks awful. It looks like a huge difference. But talent-wise, yeah, it's probably three or four guys difference. But that's the NFL. I mean, there really isn't that much difference, but there's a lot of difference, you know, record-wise.
Does it start with a quarterback? I mean, we've seen Kaepernick for three games.
It does. This is a quarterback league. Watching the game last night. I mean, Seattle and Buffalo. I'm actually starting to become a fan of this Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, he's pretty resourceful, isn't he?
Pretty resourceful, and he throws a nice ball. He runs well. He seems to have a great command of, you know, what he's doing. And then there's Russell Wilson, who's probably one of the handful of best players in the league, at quarterback.
Right.
So yes, it starts as quarterback. I mean, that's what the league is. It's quarterback driven.
No doubt.
And unfortunately, there are only a few. Brady's, Breeze,
right. Rogers.
Rogers. and look, even, you know, Aaron, there's a good example. Aaron's, he looks like he's struggling because, you know, either the cast around him is struggling, or maybe he is struggling, or, you know, Mike's struggling with play calling, you know, and they're struggling as an offense, but they got one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Maybe Tony Romo will be available since he's not getting that job back with the Cowboys. And maybe Nick Foles. I mean, if Alex Smith comes back, Foles look pretty good for Kansas City.
You know, and there's a team with a system, and it doesn't surprise me, you know, that Nick Foles was able to come on there and play well. Andy Reid's got a system there that and he knows how to call plays to put the quarterback in a position to be successful,
right?
And distributes the ball distribute the ball accurately to the playmakers.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of playmakers, DeJuan Harris seems like a playmaker. I mean,
sure does.
And he was undrafted. I mean, he runs really hard.
He does run hard. And to my point earlier, though, he seemed to have had more yards than what he did statistically at the end of the game. Then I think he only ended up with like maybe 83 yards?
It was
either 63 or 83.
Well, yeah, he had 83 rushing. 83 receiving.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, and he had 59 rushing. I mean,
reception. So it was rushing yards is what I was thinking about. That I thought to myself, that's all he had. He made some. And in my mind, watching it, he made some nice runs that were, you know, nice chunks, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards. And I would have thought that he had, you know, closer to 100 yards rather than closer to 50. I kind of like the way that he ran the ball, though.
Yeah, he's a valuable piece, definitely. Yeah. At least they found something there.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, we'll look forward to talking about the Arizona game next week, and then we'll kind of look ahead to Tom Brady coming in a couple weeks here to Levi Stadium. Thanks a lot, and we'll look forward to that at least.
Yeah.
And have a good week.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Join us on Monday for a very special podcast. In person, we'll have 49ers safety Eric Reed at the Brixton Restaurant in San Francisco. So join us there. We'll have a special podcast. And then on Tuesday, Steve Bono will be back with us to talk about the 49ers game against the Arizona Cardinals. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to 49ers Extra on thesportsvirus.com.